The following podcast is proudly sponsored by Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in Burlington. Fall golf is spectacular at Crosswinds. The colors are glorious. Have you seen the shades of red and gold out there? It's beautiful. The scenery, spectacular. The golf, superb. 18 holes of championship golf, suitable for all levels of play. Breathtaking views of Rattlesnake Point and Mount Nemo along the Niagara Escarpment, and the finest customer service you will ever experience. At Crosswinds, they make you feel like a member of a private golf course, but it's open to the public. So don't delay, because there are only so many good days of golf left. You know what I'm talking about. I'm chalishing to play Crosswinds again. I can't wait. I'm going Sunday. It's going to be 14 and sunny. Book your tee time online now at crosswindsgolf.com and save $10 per golfer. And when you get there, tell them Hebsy sent you. Now, Mike, let's start the podcast. Hey, sports fans, welcome to Hebsy on Sports, episode number 305. I went into my opening night announcer thing there, right? Oh, number 51. Like, everybody gets introduced. I'm surprised they didn't introduce every single person at the game in Montreal, with a torch, for crying out loud. Those fracucked Montrealers. Mark Hepscher here in the Little Italy studios alongside Toronto Mike. Today is the day I finally get a few things off my chest regarding the 2022 Toronto Blue Jays. I'm struggling, folks. I don't mind telling you, I'm struggling. It's good that you're here, because I need someone to listen and contribute as well. I need to cut loose. The Maple Leafs are back. Speaking of cutting loose, boy, after the opening night, man, I'm telling you, I was like, oh my God, is this what's going to happen? But they bounce back. It's a beautiful thing. We'll talk about the Leafs. We'll talk about the TSN and the Sportsnet broadcasts and how they differ and who's better and what's better. And do you even watch the intermissions? And do you care who the personnel are? And, you know, and all that stuff in media. Interested in your comments there? Maybe you're interested in mine. Do you think Elliot Friedman would make a good host? Like, is if you threw Elliot into any situation, you don't think he could come, you know, smelling like a rose?
Very talented guy. He could do anything.
Yeah, anything. I mean, he should be the James Duffy of sports then when it comes to hockey. It's just throwing it out there. Is Steve Simmons the most hated member of the Toronto sports media? That's a rhetorical question.
Right.
Horrible human being. And what he wrote this last week about Hakeem Elihu was disgusting. Really was. More stories about sports media, tennis, golf, football. And if we have time, Mike, remind me a couple stories about Tony Kubek, who turned 87 this week.
Wow.
And Bob Costas, who goes on and on and on and on. And then, you know, the guy he's working with, Ron Darling, is like, yep. Uh-huh. That's all he can get in. Anyway, it's all ahead. First, Toronto, Mike, how you doing? What a week it was. What a weekend it's going to be. I'm looking at the weekend lineup of sports. Baseball, NFL, MLS, National Women's Soccer League, La Liga, EPL, okay? The Spurs are playing Everton. Liverpool, Man City, oh my God. NHL, 1,000 games. NBA preseason, ooh, Raptors, Celtics, ooh. Boxing, NASCAR, PGA, LIV Golf, tennis. Fantastic. Canadians involved. It's beautiful.
Are you really going to tune in for the MLS playoffs?
No, but if Toronto were in, I would be. That would be the only one.
Right.
That would be the only one.
Yeah. You mentioned those vibrant colors we're having in the trees. You see them at Crosswinds. Go to Crosswinds. Check it out. But I heard it's because we had a dry summer. Apparently, there's some correlation between a dry summer and more vibrant colors on your fall leaves.
So would you sacrifice a dry summer to see the fall colors the way they are in their splendor?
Well, that'd be sell. I feel like that's not fair to the farmers and, you know, the people who have to put the food on our plate. But, you know, selfishly, yeah. I do like the colors. Yes.
Spectacular. And it happened so quickly. Like, we were on the stretch of road at on Highway 7 outside of Claremont. Right. And so we're there. I guess it was a week ago Saturday driving. It was nice. Nothing spectacular. And then we went the following Saturday and was like, oh my God, is this the same? It was unbelievable. The reds and golds were fantastic.
So go to Crosswinds.
Yeah, so go to anywhere actually, but yeah, Crosswinds. And apparently in Northern Ontario, up Elliott Lake, my girlfriend's son is playing hockey up there for the Elliott Lake Red Wings of the Northern Ontario League. It was, these colors were there a couple weeks ago and are even more spectacular.
Wow. Worth the drive.
Yeah. Before we begin the official part of, I don't know, whatever part of the show, I'd like to remind you that this podcast would not be possible without the help of our sponsor, Crosswinds Golf and Country Club. But Crosswinds is closed for the winter, darn it. So we need a full-time sponsor, at least for the winter months. So if you're interested or you know somebody who is, get in touch with me, get in touch with Toronto Mike. Rates are reasonable. You know, they're negotiable, man. It's a podcast, right? You'll get social media calls. You'll get all that stuff, right? And you'll get good bang for your buck. Most importantly, you'll keep the show going. I mean, you don't want to be responsible if the show withers and dies on the vine, do you? That'd be terrible, right? You'd have to listen to somebody else. You'd have to listen to a podcast about sport, Toronto sports, that wasn't as good as this one.
Right.
And if you're not interested in sponsoring, that's okay, because, you know, perhaps, and I'm holding up a copy of my book here, perhaps for a Christmas gift, because Christmas is coming, you know, quicker than you think, and always good to have on hand Christmas gifts. The Greatest Athlete You've Never Heard Of is my book about George Orton, Canada's first Olympic gold medalist. Makes great Christmas gift, $35, and I'll have it delivered to your door, personally signed by me. What could be better? And it helps defray the cost of putting the show together every week.
So, yeah, remind us how to contact you, and then...
MarkHebscher@gmail.com.
Strathroy is where he's from, right, George Orton?
That's where he was born.
Born, okay.
But he actually was raised in the town where Larry Robinson is from, Winchester, Ontario.
Winchester, okay. Well, this summer I was camping at Pinery, and our camping neighbors were from Strathroy. And the minute I say this, she goes, oh, we're from Strathroy. And then I said, oh, George Washington Orton is from Strathroy. I said, that's the greatest athlete you've never heard of. And of course she hadn't heard of him. And then I told her all about the Hebsy, the Mark Hebscher book. And she said she's going to check it out. And then, and so that's like my first like real life encounter with somebody from Strathroy. But it's
cool. Yeah. Nice people, like turkey farmer country, like not just, but you know, a lot of turkey farms.
And a lot closer to Pinery than we are. So.
Out around there. It's very nice. Yeah. And yes, thanks for that. So yeah, the book, you want to sponsor, keep the show going. Hepsi, got to wet my whistle, but at the same time, I'm not looking to make millions here, but at the same time, you want a nice show once a week. I think we have it for you. Now,
let me set you up here to say that when the shit went down on Saturday afternoon, and that was like, I don't know, 4+ hours, whatever. I got multiple notes from people saying, we need to break in. We need a special episode of Hebsy on Sports because people wanted to hear your take on what happened on Saturday. Mm. So here we are. I waited 6 days for this. So the floor is yours. I'm going to sit back and enjoy.
Thanks. So my knee-jerk reaction to last Saturday's choke job was the same as yours, the same as everybody else's. What the fuck just happened? Right? You sat there and went, what did I just... I replayed it, sort of those moments, you know, the ones I'm talking about. But at the same time, I knew there was no guarantee that they were going to win it. And remember, even if they did, there was going to be a game 3 the next day. So I kind of went, well, hang on a second. It wasn't like they had it in their grasp. They were going to win the champagne was on ice. No, it was like, we got to hang on to this and then win the next day. And at the same time, I was like, okay, wait a second. You need your, same as everybody else, but hang on a second. You've been through this before. You've been through this before. Repeat after me. Okay, it wasn't just blowing a 7-run lead in a game, a particular game, a big game, yes. But I'd seen stranger things happen with this team over the last, how many years? 47 years? No. 47 years?
45. No. 45.
Is that right?
Yeah, 77.
46, yeah. So you have to include that season. So we're going to, how many is it? 46 years now, whatever it is.
46, yeah.
Okay. So you may not have lived through what I did, the agony of the torture of 1987, the team that was the best of all the Blue Jay teams, was the 87 team. Took the division lead in early September, went 13-3 down the stretch. 13-3 in September, kicking the shit out of Detroit and Milwaukee and the Yankees and Boston and Cleveland and all the other motherfuckers that are in the American League East at the time, not divisional play. That way there was East, there was West. The Jays were the best. The Jays had 96 wins with 7 games to go. 96 wins. But Tony Fernandez got taken out by Bill Madlock. I'm sure you heard the story from your grandfather. Broke his elbow. and then landed right on, like, if he lands on the regular turf, he doesn't break the elbow, but there was a seam there because of the football field, and there was a steel portion there, the whole, we went out there to look at it. When I stepped on this steel beam underneath there, that Fernandez's elbow landed on, I was just, that's a freak accident. Anywhere else, yeah, he might hurt the elbow. You're not going to break it that way. So he's done. And then like a couple games later, Ernie Witt goes sliding into second base, into Paul Molitor's knee, breaks two ribs. Boom. So now you got two of your best players out, and now George Bell's got no protection in the batting order. You can pitch around George Bell. He's swinging at bad pitches, even though he ends up winning the MVP. It was the choke of all chokes. It was choke. Okay? No Fernandez, no Witt. Manny Lee and Greg Myers and Charlie Moore were the replacements. It was agony. Now, I live this every day, every day. And the final 7 days was water torture. Okay? It was the worst. So that's what I have in my memory. And so with that in mind, let's go over this disaster of a game. Remember, it was just to get to another elimination game. It would have been Logan Gilbert pitching against Ross Stripling. Jordan Romano likely would be on fumes, right? Had they gone to Sunday because of all the pitches he threw Saturday. Let's get to that. So the Jays are up 8-1 in the sixth. We know that. Tapia has just replaced Merrifield in left field because Witt got beaned. And nobody came to his rescue when it was obvious that it was intentional, that Houston had fucked things up badly. They weren't going to win the game. Now they're throwing at our guys. They hit Teoscar. They fucking beaned him. I mean, if I'm Merrifield, I run out to, I don't care. You cannot do that, man. So now they take Merrifield out, I guess, because he got beaned, not because Tapia is a better defender. There's no way. Tapia is not a good defender. So why are you putting him out there in left field instead of Jackie Bradley Jr., a Gold Glover? Had they kept Bradley Zimmer on the roster instead of Kikuchi, they could have put him in. That's what they're there for. Defense, hold a lead. Anyway, it cost the Jays because Tapia couldn't make a play on a popper, a blooper. He doesn't play. He's just not sharp like the other guys, okay? He's an average, below average defender. Now the bases are loaded and then there's nobody out. It's 8-1, but Gosman's going along and he's run into a bit of trouble here. Not all his fault. The crowd's in a frenzy. He's at 95 pitches. Okay. But hang on a second. Carlos Santana, who doubled off the wall, just missing a home run his previous time up, is coming up. All right. So Gosman's dealing. He had the bases loaded. He gets two outs. He got a strikeout. He got a pop up. He deserves another shot at Santana. Santana's the number 7 hitter in the lineup. Even if he hits a grand slam, you're still up by 4 runs. Instead, Schneider brings in Tim Mesa. Okay? Mesa gave up the Judge homer a few days earlier. And that switches Santana over to the right side, where everybody knows he pounds lefty pitchers. He's 50 points high. I think he's 49 points higher from the right side in his career. That's significant. And Mesa's worried. So what does he do? First pitch, uncorks a wild pitch. So now it's 8-2. But you know what? That's all right. Because now you've got runners at second and third, and you don't have to deal with Santana. You walk him. Because the number 8 hitter is coming up, and it's going to be the pinch hitter, Dylan Moore. And who would you rather face? Dylan Moore or Carlos Santana? Okay? Veteran. Guy who has more home runs than anybody else in the ballpark in his career. Anybody else. Most home runs of all the players? Carlos Santana. Okay? Pounds left-handed pitching. But no. You're going to strike him out. Right? You're not going to strike him out, okay? You walk him. You get to Dylan Moore. Moore can't hit Mesa with a canoe paddle. So Mesa is going to strike out Dylan Moore after walking Carlos Santana, and the Jays are going to lead 8-2 after 6 innings. What's that, Mike? It didn't happen that way? It didn't happen that way? They didn't walk Carlos Santana to get to Dylan fucking Moore? No! This is where your rookie manager... And I'm not saying Charlie Montoya would have done it. I don't know. But John Schneider is a rookie manager, and he has a rookie manager brain cramp at the worst time. Doesn't call for the intentional pass. Let's Mesa pitch to the guy that has more home runs than anybody in the ballpark. 278 lifetime home runs. 5 more in the postseason. Are you kidding me? This is where you use, Mike. This is the class. If you were to have an illustration of where to use the intentional walk, this is it. Runners second and third. You're not putting the tying run on base. You're not putting the go-ahead run on base. You're putting the fifth run on base. You already have 8 runs. Come on. And that's if Dylan Moore hits a home run. Ridiculous. You walk him. You don't compound the problem. And they did. So here I'm beside myself right now because nobody else would want to be beside me. I'm fuming. I have this sick feeling. And I'm yelling at my TV, walk him. Pitch to Dylan fucking Moore. Walk him. Walk him. Please. It's a no-brainer. I'm yelling at my television. But Schneider doesn't hear me. He doesn't order the intentional walk. Oh, no. Mesa throws. There's a long drive. And it's gone. 3-run shot. And everybody hangs their head. And now it's 8-5. And the ballpark is silent. It's only the 6th inning. But it's like, uh-oh. Shouldn't have taken Gausman out. Uh-oh. Mesa, just like he gave up that home run to Aaron Judge. The dome is a morgue. And now Dylan fucking Moore comes to the plate. And now Tim Mesa strikes out Dylan fucking Moore. Right there, Mike, right there. That was it. Right there in my mind. Okay? Gausman's dealing. Remember, the bases were loaded. He wasn't getting hit hard. 95 pitches, dude, it's the end of the season. You're telling me you can't go 110? 105? You're at 95 and you're dealing. So that's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake. But to bring in Mesa, okay. And now he throws the wild pitch. So he didn't know what the hell he's doing. Right off the bat, first pitch, wild pitch, moves the runner. You have to. First base is open. You can't let a guy like that beat you. Anyway, you're still up by 3, right? Next inning, Mesa gets an out. Then Jimmy Garcia comes in. Bang, bang, 2 more outs. And it's 8-5. Going to the bottom of the 7th. And then Danny Jansen gives us an insurance run. And we're up 9-5 going to the 8th, 9-5. So Jimmy Garcia comes back out, right? Because he only threw 7 pitches. He comes back out, right? Right, right. No, no, it's Anthony Bass. Oh, okay. We're up by 4 runs. I mean, Bass is pitching, okay? But he gets into trouble. Why does he get into trouble? Because Tapia is playing left field. Not Jackie Bradley Jr. Not Bradley Zimmer. Not, I don't care, Kevin Biggio. It's Tapia and left, and he can't make a play on a catchable ball. And soon it's 9-6, and there's nobody out, and there's 2 men on. And Jesus Christ, Schneider is bringing in Jordan Romano to get the final 6 outs. This is a ballsy move. Ballsy. After putting Tapia out there defensively, after taking Gausman out after 95 pitches, he doesn't bring in Adam Simber. He doesn't bring in Zach Pop. He doesn't bring in Jose Berrios or Ross Stripling or Alec Manoa or Kikuchi. He brings in Romano. Panic move by Schneider? I don't know about that. I was okay with it because Romano had been asked to get 6 outs on a couple of occasions earlier this year, and he did it. And he's an all-star. So he goes up, and first thing he does, he gives up a base hit. Now the bases are loaded. And he's not used to this situation. Okay, he's not used to coming in with runners on base and having to get 6 outs. But still, he's Jordan Romano, right? Then he strikes out a hobbling Santana. Then he strikes out an overmatched Dylan fucking Moore. Again. And then that blooper to left center. Okay, the one everyone's going to go, oh, no. Like the Buckner ball going through the legs, you know, even though that was different, it was the World Series. And anyway, it's one of those things. Oh, no. No, the suspended animation. How long was the ball in the air for? Okay. I've been going over this like it's the Zapruder film, scrutinizing every frame. Number one, Tapia sure wasn't going to get it. He was watching it. Should have been back in the play up. And since Jackie Bradley Jr. wasn't in the game defensively, and it was a banged up George Springer who's playing deep but has a knack for diving catches, and Bo Bichette, who was prepared to go flat out to make the play without any regard for an outfielder who might be hell-bent on making a circus catch coming directly in. Springer had to take an indirect route to the ball because at the last second, he saw that Bo was headed into his path. So Springer had to alter his path. Now, did Springer yell, I got it, I got it? I didn't hear. I didn't hear anyone ask him. I never heard. Nobody talked to Springer afterwards. We didn't even know if he was being evaluated, nothing. But he's coming in full speed. Did he go, I got it, I got it? Does an outfielder do that when he's going to make a diving play? I don't know. I don't think so. But I didn't hear. Did Bo hear him? Should Bo have peeled off, even if he didn't hear Springer, knowing, thinking that Springer was going to be coming in and make one of his patented diving catches? Should Tapia have made a play that would have prevented the tying run from scoring? Had he not should have come over and backed the play up? So when that ball did bounce or something weird happened, he's right there to prevent the tying run from scoring. The answer is no, no, yes, and yes. Everybody screwed up there. The dome was eerily silent. The game was now tied. The huge lead evaporated before our eyes. It took an eternity of eerie silence before Springer got carted off and JBJ finally replaced him. A bit late, but we're still tied. But you knew, Mike, everybody knew. Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler knew. Because in the eighth inning, Bo walks with one out. Now that's the go-ahead run. I know we just blew a lead, but that's the go-ahead run, and it's the fucking eighth inning. The fans are like, because they're tired. And why are the fans tired? Because they'd be getting up every time a Blue Jays pitcher gets two strikes on a hitter, cheering for the strikeout. Everybody gets up and go, we want a strikeout. This is the mentality now. So all this that you were doing in the first inning and the second and third inning, every time a Blue Jay pitcher got two strikes, now you got no energy left. You're spent. The fans are all spent. We're all spent. Okay? And Buck doesn't hardly says anything. He doesn't go, oh, the tying run is on and Bo's got good speed. And look, it's coming up here. Hey, ho. We got Vladdy Guerrero and we got Alejandro Kirk coming up. Two of the best hitters in the league. They're coming with Bo. It's the go-ahead run. It's the eighth inning. We can still... Nothing. Not a fucking thing. Hey, Tabby, tying run on base. We can win this. Nothing. Crickets. And then what happens? Then Bo steals second. And now we got... Now he's in scoring position. Vladdy and Kirk are coming up. Hey, oh, we got the go-ahead run. Eighth inning. Blue Jays... A base hit and we take the lead. No more rhythmic clapping from the fans. They're done. They're spent. Nobody can raise their arms anymore because they were cheering for those strikeouts in the first inning. Ah, let's go. No wave. Nothing. By this time, everybody was clapped out, high-fived out, sitting on their hands because they had already chewed their nails down to the wood. Everyone was numb. Okay? I don't even think they were still serving beer. Really, in the eighth? They should have been. So when Vladdy and Kirk both grounded out with the go-ahead run in scoring position, it seems nobody was alarmed. Like we had accepted this as fact. It wasn't going to happen. Nobody was outraged. Nobody was shaking their fists. How can you guys not drive in runs? What the hell's the matter with you? Especially from the night before when they had zero runs, swinging at everything. Ugh. And then... These fuckers like Stephen King, this fucking horror writer, the author, making jokes about, oh, the Blow Jays. That's why they call them the Blow Jays and shit like that. Well, it just, you know, but hey, it's okay. They were still tied. It's a tie game. And then what happens is in the ninth inning, Romano's out there again. He's thrown like 22 pitches. He gives up a double and then he gives up a deep fly ball. And then with two outs, Adam Fraser is like, he's like, I know Romano's going to throw me that slider. I know he's throwing the slider. He's throwing me, and he's waiting on the slider, and he drills that slider into right field. Another double. Mariners lead 10-9. And now Romano gets pulled at 29 pitches. And that was it. That's the last thing we saw. I had to leave the game. Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory is something Toronto fans have gotten used to, but I'm convinced, Mike, that if you walk Santana with first base open and pitch to Dylan fucking Moore, you're 99.3% out of the inning. You win that game. You win Sunday. Stripling out duels, Logan, what's his name? And you're playing Houston right now. Right now, you're playing Houston instead of golfing and watching Seattle. We're going to go down three straight to Houston. Boom, boom, boom. And the aftermath was, oh, God, fire Schneider, get rid of Bo. No, that's the knee jerk. Of course, you're upset. You want to blame someone. That's the way we are. Whose fault? Who? Whose fault was that? Springer's fault was Bo should have never tried for that. So what the hell was going on? Why were you playing him over? Come on. That's baseball, man. However, John Schneider's major league inexperience, combined with the inability of the players to execute properly, that led to that loss and subsequent elimination. Okay? I mean, you can't, but I mean, Schneider, ultimately, you're the manager. You made the calls. You were the one who said, no, let's pitch to Santana. Coach, you got first base open. Nope. I know. Let's pitch to Santana. Dylan fucking Moore is on deck as a pinch hitter. Nope. Okay. But have you seen the numbers? Have you seen Santana's numbers as a right-handed hitter against lefties? Have you? Remember what he did in his previous at-bat? He almost hit it out against... that's why you replaced Gausman. And don't even get me started. Game one, they couldn't hit Luis Castillo, right? They were anxious. They were undisciplined at the plate. What happened to this team? What happened to this team, Mike? Teoscar, boy, he knows the strike zone. Hey, and Vladdy, boy, look at that. Oh, they don't expand the zone. No. They're such good hitters. Did you know, Mike, that Vladdy and Bo and Teoscar were first, fourth, and 16th in the major leagues in grounding into double plays? In the majors, first, fourth, and 16th. You know what that tells me, Mike? It tells me they're undisciplined. It tells me they want to swing at bad pitches rather than walk. That's what it tells me. That yeah, they can hit the ball. Yeah. But they don't pay enough attention. They don't pay enough. They're too excited about trying to hit a ball that's tough to hit rather than taking a pitch. And all this talk about, oh, they're much better. You know, they don't. Take a look at the walks. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'll bet you none of those three guys walked. I don't know. Maybe Vladdy had over 50 walks, but Teoscar, now he doesn't walk. Bo doesn't walk. I mean, you know, their on base percentages are, yeah, like 330. That's not good enough, man. You got to be on base more often than that. You can't be doing that. And then in game two, man, you know, you got your manager making questionable calls. You got a bullpen that failed them. When you score 9 runs, you should win. So that's sort of my take on that game, on the game.
Okay. That was awesome, by the way. So thank you. It was worth the wait, worth the 6 days I waited for that. That was tremendous. And you made a lot of great points. A lot of great points. A lot of thoughts. So one thing is on the YouTube channel. In game one, should we have... you know, let Manoa pitch further into that game to preserve the bullpen for games two and three. Like, do you think...
I thought Manoa was pitching amazing. I thought he was pitching great. I mean, that first inning thing, sure, jitters, whatever. He couldn't have command. But then after that, he was terrific. But I just thought that Jays were so undisciplined. They were so anxious to get those runs back. And the way that this team does it is with home runs. They want to hit home runs. They're swinging for the fences. Right. And as much as I like to say, yeah, we can play good small ball, they didn't. And even down the stretch, Mike, there wasn't a time where I said, this team is great. They're getting better. I never got that feeling. I just didn't get that feeling. So when people were like, oh, we're shocked at the Blue Jays. Yeah. Shocked that any team blows a 7-run lead. That's shocking.
Right.
But come on, take a step back. Are you really shocked? How many games did they win this year? One more than last year. One more game than last year. And they ended up playing 2 playoff games this year. Last year, they played 0 playoff games, right? Is it a step up from Montoya? Yeah, because go back to 2020 in that half season, that whatever season where they had a playoff game, whatever you want to call it, and you pulled Matt Shoemaker. Go back to that.
Right.
So you've got managers that have made incorrect decisions, inexperienced managers that you know, might have saved you a game, might have done it.
Now, I have a silly question, but are we sure John Schneider makes these calls, like to take Gausman out, for example? Like, is it perhaps there's analytics at work and there's some egghead making a decision based on analytics?
Ultimately, the manager makes a decision. A lot of guys go with their guts. They don't just look at a book. Okay. And John Schneider didn't look at a book, because if you looked at a book, he'd say the play here is to walk the dangerous hitter with a base open and pitch to the guy who's not nearly as dangerous, who ultimately ended up striking out. He struck the dude out. He was totally overmatched against Meza.
Right.
And Schneider's got to go, all right, I'd rather put Santana over there, or up 7 runs, and pitch to this guy. It's a simple thing.
What a series of errors. Okay, and I have a question about the bloop double that ended up tying this game. And
right. Again,
like you, it is like the Zapruder film. I've watched it 100 times. Let's assume for a minute that Springer did not call off Bo Bichette. Because if Springer
you're not in a play like that, unless you're sure you can make that play, you're not calling for it. You're just running and hoping like hell you don't run into somebody.
But the short
and it's happened stuff, before. Yeah. It's happened before, not just with the Jays, but with lots of teams. In the heat of the moment, as you're chasing it, Mike, you've done this before. You're like, can I get to this ball? And in your mind, you're like, can you take a quick glance? No, you can't. You got your eye on the ball. You don't know where the other guy is. You're hoping he's not going to run into you, right? Because the outfielder always has priority, right? And he's going full bore until he hears, I got it from somebody else.
Right.
If he doesn't hear, I got it from somebody else, he keeps on going.
Right.
And Bo is going back and he's not, he doesn't think he has it. So he can't go, I got it.
Right.
He's running, waiting to hear Springer go, I got it.
Right.
Neither guy hears the other guy go, I got it, because neither guy thought he could get it with certainty.
Right. So I
but Springer did alter his, Springer might have gotten it. Okay. Yes. He might have made that play.
Right.
But he noticed at the last second that he had to take a more circuitous route to where the ball was going to be. And Bo was going back, and Bo almost got it too. Bo's leap was just out of his reach. Yeah. So imagine how tantalizing that ball must have appeared to Bo, right? And to Springer at the same time. And to Springer, if Bo peels off, if he gets called off at the last second. But as Springer is running, he's thinking, you know, Bo might have that ball. He might, you know, what do you do?
Right. Right. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. My goodness. Right. Okay. Now you made the great point. You're up by, what is it? 8-1. So
you're up seven runs. Yeah.
Why put Tapia in there for his bat when at that point it should be all about defense, right? You've got the 7-run lead. Right. It's an elimination game. You need to win.
Well, Tapia, in that regard, Tapia becomes a pinch hitter or a pinch runner, but not a defensive replacement.
Right.
Tapia is usually the guy who, if he starts, he's going to get replaced in the late innings by Zimmer, by Jackie Bradley Jr., move guys around. Now, this nonsense about that I hear from people going, oh, so-and-so, Teoscar never plays left fielder. This is bullshit. An outfielder is an outfielder. You can catch a fly ball, right? Now, granted, being a center fielder, it's different to play a corner. Of course, the ball's curving away from you more. It's different. You have less room. There's walls. But come on. All these guys have played this. They've all played different positions. They've played, I've never played left field. I don't know what to do. Stop it with this. These are professional ball players, right? And you know that Remail Tapia is not the type of a guy. You don't see him again. Oh, I'm totally confident of him making the play, throwing to the right base, being able to get to the ball. He's you get a little nervous when he's circling under a ball, right? So that's why you have Jackie Bradley Jr., Gold Glover. That's why you had Zimmer. He kept on the roster for almost the whole season. You got him back, but guy hits 130, but he's a tremendous defender. And in a short series, you didn't need Kikuchi. You weren't going to use Kikuchi in any of the three games. You just weren't.
Right.
You weren't, okay? Like, so why would they have him there? They go, well, what if we're up by 7 runs? Well, if that's the case, why didn't you bring Kikuchi in with the score 8-1 instead of Meza if you had him on the run anyway?
Well, I mean, hindsight is 20/20, obviously, that everybody knows that. But looking back, like the fact that we had Tapia out there instead of Jackie Bradley Jr. in an 8-1 game, to me, in hindsight, is a bit of a what the heck. Now, Kevin, Canada Kevin.
There were three plays. Tapia, if he makes one of the three plays, one of the three, we probably get out of that.
And you know what? I will say, as a fan who watched, you know, every minute of these two games, by the way, I didn't. This is the most counting of the chickens I've ever done, I think. We'll talk in a minute about Game 7 in 2013 for the Maple Leafs, which I think was a bigger collapse than this one. But I counted those chickens so hard. It was 8-1. I was already trying to figure out, okay, if this happens, this is the time we'll eat the dinner at my mom's house on Sunday.
Right, exactly. We were the same thing. Yeah. There's a 4:07 game on Sunday. What time are you serving the turkey? Oh, yeah, everyone did.
But I think that's why the dome was eerily silent. Like, it's like everybody counted those chickens, and then they're like, oh, shit, they didn't hatch yet. And then I think that's also what Buck and Tabby were going through. I think they were also making plans for Game 3.
Once Springer went down, and then he tried to exhort the fans on, like, from the back of a car. So sad, right? Come on, fans. It's tied. We're not out of it. Come on. Like, that was like,
You're already dead.
Yeah. So here's what we got. Here's the deal. Free agency begins. First of all, once the World Series ends, right? Like, you could sign with your team now, whatever. But once the World Series ends, there's a 5-day period before free agency begins. And in those 5 days, teams are allowed to put qualifying offers out to their existing players, free agents, whatever, and try to negotiate something in that period. And then after that, total free agency, go and sign with any team that you want to, like off you go. So this is where the Jays have to be active the way they have been the last how many years? Ryu, Springer, Simeon, right?
Yeah, they're active.
Right?
They've been impressive, yeah.
Yeah. And no, not Simeon. Simeon was only here for a year, so he wasn't a free agent. What am I thinking?
Well, Gausman came in to replace Robbie Ray.
Right, you got Gausman. Again, so Robbie Ray. So you've got these guys that you've signed as free agents, right? And you've made trades for. So priority number one, you got to have a power arm in the bullpen. At least one. A guy that can produce swings and misses. We don't have that guy. We got Romano, but the rest of the bullpen needs those big 100-mile-an-hour power arms. That's priority number one.
Well, that was one thing, watching the Mariners' bullpen throw in 102-mile-an-hour heat. Yeah,
good did that do them in the Houston series, eh? terrible, that bullpen. Like, oh, my God, terrible, right? So you just – and that's the thing is, when you see – like, it's talk about high leverage. When a relief pitcher gives up a run or a home run, a relief pitcher, it's like, oh, my God, he hasn't done this all year long. You know, these guys all have whips of like, you know, around one or under one. They strike out more than there are innings pitched. So you have to have a couple of those guys. We don't have those guys in the bullpen unless Nate Pearson down in the Dominican develops a 100-mile-an-hour in the strike zone with movement type of pitch. Then you could, a guy like that or Julian Merriweather if his arm doesn't fall off. Anyway, priority number two, you need a shortstop and a center fielder. So that's two. You have to have a shortstop and a center fielder that are defensively sound and can hit the ball too, right? Those are two key positions. You've already got lots of catchers, and you could use another catcher too, a veteran catcher. You need defense up the middle, and that is catcher, shortstop, second base, center field. You have to have it. You have to have it. And if you noticed, prime example was what happened with Springer and with Bo. You have to have great fielders in those positions.
Well, you mentioned in the past, Bo Bichette's not a Major League Baseball shortstop, at least not a playoff successful team. Okay. So, and on that play, I was actually thinking of those words and everything. So you're saying move him to second base.
Right. Exactly. Now he's going to get his backup about it. When they brought in Simeon, who was a much better shortstop than Bo, Simeon had to play second base. I think they knew they were only going to have him for a year anyway, Simeon, but they didn't want to upset Bo. They should have. What they should have done was they should have, in hindsight, moved Bo to second. But second base at the time, Biggio was your second baseman, and you had some depth at second base. And anyway, why move Bo if he's doing okay at shortstop? Okay, so here's what you do. Mm-hmm. You need a new shortstop. You need a new center fielder. You move Bo to second. You move Springer to right or even left field. I don't care if egos are in the way. Couldn't give a shit. He can be a DH. He can be a left fielder. Don't know about his elbow. And he's like 32, 33 years old, man. You know what happens to outfielders around that age, especially center fielders. So go get a couple of quality defenders to take their places. Number three, your manager, whoever he may be. And John Schneider, not a lock. Someone says to you, you want to win World Series now in the next couple of years. Maybe you don't want to have a manager that's learning on the job. Maybe. I don't know. And by the same token, John Schneider could get offers from other teams. Hmm. Other teams could say, hey, we'd love to have you. You'd be great with our young player. We think you're terrific. So whoever the manager is must insist on the fundamentals being followed, completely followed. Fundamentals of the game. And a greater focus on the game by the players while the game is going on. Okay, you have to have a higher level of professionalism if you're going to win. Watch these other teams. Watch them. Oh, they celebrate. Oh, yeah. But there's a level of professionalism, right? They know the game. They don't make mistakes the way the Blue Jays can make mistakes. This is about it. No. This isn't the home run jacket. This is while the game is going on. The people that concentrate the most on the game and look for little things, that's scouting, as opposed to looking at the iPads. So what did I do wrong? Which are fine. That's great. But I like it when they're engaged in the game. I'm watching other teams during the playoffs. They're all into it, right? They're all into it. There's a time to goof around. There's a time to be paying attention because you're looking for any edge, Mike. You're looking for any advantage, any tell, any bit of knowledge that can help you win. And yeah, you can have fun playing the game Maybe cut back on the home run jacket and the sunflower seeds and the predictable drenching of Hazel May and Arash Madani after every fucking victory. So yeah, okay, Mike, yeah, I'm talking to Vladdy. Take charge of your team. Everybody looks up to you. Stop with the, you know, the home run jacket. I don't have a problem with the drenching stuff, like stuff like that. It's fun and all that type of thing, but it kind of makes you look like a high school team, man, you know? And if you're not winning, you can't be doing stuff like, yeah, last year was the trailer, this year's the movie, right? You want to talk the talk, you got to walk the fucking walk. So here's my suggestion to the Blue Jays, take it for what it's worth. You got trade chips. You got Teoscar Hernandez. He's arbitration eligible, probably cost you $14 million in arbitration. And then he becomes a free agent the following season. That's a lot of dough, $14 million. And he's going to walk as a free agent. You got Lourdes Gurriel Jr., disappointing year, injury-prone guy. He signed through 2023. He's arbitration eligible in 2024. He's a free agent in 2025. Some teams would be interested in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. You got Danny Jansen. I know. Well, hang on. He's arbitration eligible now. So what's it going to cost you in arbitration? $6 million, $7 million, $5 million? I don't know. He's a free agent in 2025. Valuable guy to trade. Okay? You got Bo Bichette. Maybe you don't move him to second. Maybe you go, what can we get for this guy? Arbitration eligible now. So what, $10 million in arbitration? He's got a little over two years of service. Free agent, not till 2026. You got Alejandro Kirk, who's arbitration eligible, not till 2024, and he's a free agent in 2027. How would that be for a long-term get? You kidding me? You don't think teams are interested in Alejandro Kirk? For sure they are. We got lots of trade chips. Here's some free agents to pursue. You want an outfielder? You want a center fielder? You want a left-handed hitter? A good defender? Guys who got some power? Brandon Nimmo of the Mets. Okay. Move Springer to right, move him to left. Depends on what happens with Teoscar. You got shortstop Trey Turner of the Dodgers. Okay. Carlos Correa of Minnesota. Dansby Swanson of Atlanta. And Xander Bogaerts of Boston. You got shortstops. You want shortstops? We got shortstops. And they're all better than Bo. You want a catcher, a veteran catcher? How about this guy for Houston, Christian Vasquez? Okay. Hell of a catcher. Platooning with Martin Maldonado, man, he'd be great. You can never have enough catching depth, and then you can make some trades. Or Wilson Contreras from the Cubs. He's going to go. It'll cost, but you got to spend the dough. So those are the guys and any trade you can make. So here's my fantasy lineup. Hebsy's fantasy lineup for 2023. First base, Vladdy. Will be back bigger and better than ever. You watch. This guy's got a lot to prove. Second base, Bo. Third base, Chappie. Shortstop, Trey Turner. Left fielder, George Springer. Center fielder, Brandon Nimmo. Right fielder, I know, Teoscar. Because I think he could be a great player if he stays healthy. I think he could be fabulous. Catcher, Gab Moreno or Wilson Contreras. Or Christian Vasquez. One of those, okay? That's a veteran catcher and a young guy. Kirk is your DH. Your pitchers, starters are Manoah, Gausman, Berríos, Ryu. Comes back from, yeah. And maybe Kikuchi, maybe Mitch White, maybe not what we saw this year, but you never know. Your relief pitchers, you got Romano, you got Garcia. You take your pick after that. You could have a whole new bullpen. Your utility players, Biggio, Espinal, Merrifield, Otto Lopez, maybe Carlos Santana. I don't know, switch hitter off the bench, can play first base if you need him, you know.
Another veteran guy.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
Okay.
Hepsi, that was fantastic. Now, I need to ask you about something that the podcast listeners won't know about at this point, but people watching on YouTube know about it. But Canada Kev points it out. He wants to know, what statement are you making? Because on your the couch behind you, there's a Blue Jay blanket that is upside down. What are you saying there, Hepsi?
Would be akin to flying the flag at half mast. There is no mast. So the only way I can do it is to put it upside down. That's kind of the way I think things are kind of going in Blue Jay land right about now. The way I'm feeling, kind of a little bit upside down.
And you're free to express yourself as
you're
you
darn right I am. Absolutely. Just remember, Mike, since day one of this franchise, since day one, I followed them in various capacities.
Right.
As a fan, as a reporter, as someone who they expected me to be the most, I am the most critical because I love them the most or have followed them the most. I don't know. Yeah, I'm entitled to be, yeah, critical. And I always have been, but the best fans, the most loyal fans, I guess, are the ones who are entitled to be critical.
Okay. So before we
heart and soul right. and life into a team and yeah,
You've earned it, buddy. Now, before we talk about the rest of the Major League Baseball, I just want to know, like, a yes or no question. Would you bring back John Schneider as your manager next season?
I would have to look at the available pool of managers. If I want to win, I can't assume that John Schneider is the guy just by saying, all right, guys, go do your thing. And I don't know. Is he too buddy-buddy with this team? Do you need, I mean, that's up to Shatkins.
That's up to those guys. Because they said, hey, how come you stuck, you know, they were asking about these moves and he's like, he's loyal to his players. He puts the trust in his players to execute. Well, if that's the case, then I can manage this team. You know what I mean? Like, it's like no one ever got fired for buying IBM. That was the old expression.
Yeah. I think experience plays a big, I think you have to look at a guy like Scott Service, who's been like, it's his seventh year managing Seattle. It was a bad team he took over and it took time and he had to develop them. And if that's what you're looking for with this team, 7 years until they mature, good luck to you. But I don't think the fan base is going to accept that. So they did accept Scott Service because he was a rookie manager and he was a young team and you know, he had paid his dues. You know, John Schneider has paid his dues, but I don't know. To me, it's like you got a great racehorse and your jockey is a bug boy. All right. He's an apprentice jockey.
I say for sure John Schneider is back as manager next season. I think it's going to happen for sure. But that's just my speculation here. Okay. But last thing here, what was worse? I want to know your thoughts on this. This 8-1 collapse in a must-win game that the Jays just went through, or the Maple Leafs blowing a 4-1 lead with 10 minutes left against...
Oh, no, the Leafs blowing the 4-1 lead.
Yeah, no, I think no doubt.
Yeah, you're talking on game 7 of a playoff series, a chance to eliminate your opponent. This was not an eliminate. Jays didn't have a chance to eliminate them. Had they been up 1-0 and that was the way to put the hammer down, and then they ended up losing the series, that's different. Right. But in that moment, just that game, no.
And just strictly because you watch a lot
of baseball. It was the sixth inning. It wasn't like they got down. They had a 7-run lead going to the eighth or ninth. It was the sixth.
Also, seven runs in baseball is an easier
happens all the time
than getting four goals in hockey.
Look what happened to Seattle a couple of days later. Come on,
right?
Big leads are never safe, and in the playoffs especially so.
All right, more baseball, Hibsy.
Yeah, well, because I have been watching the other. If I can watch them, if Sportsnet would fucking put them on a channel that I get, that you and I get, we could watch them. Instead, I got people giving me Mark illegal streams. I got more illegal streams. More people go, Mark, that's what you got to do. Screw these guys. These are all cord cutters. They don't watch cable TV like you and me. All right, so the Yankees in Cleveland were rained out yesterday. So they're going to play 4 games in 4 days if necessary. It's a best of 5. Yanks look to go up 2-0 with Nestor Cortes going up against Shane Bieber. That's going on like early this afternoon, like at 1:00 today. All right. And then later, you got the Braves on the road to Philly. Series tied 1-1. Remember, this is best of 5. Aaron Nola starts for Philly in their first home playoff game since 2011. Rob Thompson from Corunna, Ontario, is the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. How about that? Braves have yet to name a starter, although it looks like Charlie Morton's going to get the call instead of Spencer Strider. I love that name. He's coming off an oblique injury, might only be available for an inning or two. He could be an opener. They might do that. And for the first time in 16 years, San Diego hosts a playoff game and a huge one. They'll host the Dodgers with the series tied at 1. Blake Snell on the hill against Tony Gonsolin of the Dodgers. The other series resumes Saturday in Seattle. Mariners down 2-0 to Yordan Alvarez and the Houston Astros, who with a win will sweep that series. What a team. If you're a baseball fan like me, you want to watch postseason ball. Rogers Sportsnet's fucking me around and everybody else because they've switched to hockey, which means all the Sportsnet channels have hockey when there's hockey, and baseball is relegated to Sportsnet 720, Sportsnet Now, Sportsnet Zoom, Sportsnet Fuck, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 1. All the, just Mike, I hate paying a la carte for these channels. Why can't Rogers and Bell Media just include all their channels? Give me a price. And then I know that if hockey's on all these, then I can just switch over there. Well, don't gouge me with another fucking $10 a month for, like, honest to God.
I hate to side with the cable companies because it's, you're criminal what's happening here, but I need to tell you there is a price. Like, there is a price you can pay your cable provider that will give you all these sports channels. There is a price.
All of them?
You just don't, yeah. You just don't.
It's just too much, though.
Yeah, that's different.
If I can stream that for free, and I'm already paying you $300 a month or $200 a month for all of my internet. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well, a happy capitalism is somebody.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's like, and that's why Canada Kev and the gang are all pirating these streams, because they're like, enough is enough.
I know. I don't want to advertise that. Right. I don't mind paying for content, but just tell me. Just don't fuck me around like that. I'm searching. I'll tell you about the tennis later. That was another whole thing. Okay. Get this stuff? Anyway.
Can I just say one sentence then while we're talking about cable stuff? Is I'm a Bell 5 subscriber, and
me and
my 8-year-old yesterday, we wanted to watch the first home game for the Leafs because he's playing House League hockey. And I'm like, you'll see the opening. It'll be kind of exciting. So we tune in at like, 7:30. Mm. But this is a true story. On Bell 5, it's showing stuff that happened at 7:05. So it's 25, 30 minutes in the past. So I'm like, oh, that's weird. And I went to CP24 and there's a clock in the corner. I'm like, oh, my Bell 5 thinks it's 7:05, even though it's really 7:30. So I reboot the thing. I do a hard reboot because it's like, that didn't work. It turns out like us Bell 5 people yesterday couldn't see the opening of that Leaf game because it was a glitch with the system where we were 30 minutes in the past for a good half an hour before it fixed. So there, that's my rant.
Nothing
I literally
you can do about it.
Couldn't watch it. Nothing I could do about it. Unless I went to a pirate stream. But enough about that.
Right. By the way, TV numbers, the Jays drew 1.9 million last Friday afternoon, early evening, started at 4:07. 2.9 million for the Saturday game. Again, 4:07, ended at like well after 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
It was a 4-hour-plus game. Some pretty good numbers, boy. Look at the money they made just for those two games. Enough to buy a couple of free agents. Yes, sir. Maple Leafs are 1-1 so far. They allowed Montreal to come back and win their home opener. It was nice of them. And then last night at the SBA, they won their home opener against fucking Putin's buddy. Every time I see Ovechkin now, I'm like, oh, fuck. He's still got Putin on his avatar. Fuck this guy.
But hey, not on Twitter anymore. He changed Twitter, I think.
But fuck, man. Ugh. Speaking of Russians, Ilya Samsonov.
Samsonov.
Nope. No. They went through a whole thing on the panel. Okay. Change his name back. He went back. You should not be allowed to change your name. You change your name once. You tell the media and everyone else what it is. You can't change it back.
Is that right?
But he changed it back. Samsonov.
Albert Bell.
The first Russian goalie to start for the Leafs. Samsonov. He looked very shaky. Look, get him out of here. But then he hung in there, and the Leafs did too, and they won 3-2, and it was a big win for them. Last night was the TSN gang. So last night you had James Duthie, the old dog, Dave Poulin, Darren Drager, and Cheryl Pounder, who's fabulous, a great addition to that panel. Fantastic, especially compared to the Sportsnet panel, which was just, here we are, we're opening up. It's Caroline Cameron, it's Anthony Stewart, it's Jennifer Botterill, it's Elliot Friedman. But all they do is they just put a camera on the warm-up, right? And they just, here's the Leafs warming up. And then everyone's talking and there's making no sense. And there's no Ron McLean. There's no David Amber. There's no Kevin Bieksa. This isn't Hockey Night in Canada. This is the first Leaf game, right? It's Leafs Montreal. It's pretty stiff group.
Deal.
Pretty stiff group, except for Elliot Friedman, who to me would make a great host. And I was mocked for this suggestion on social media, but I think he has every quality that James Duthie has and then some. He's hosted football on CBC. He hosted horse racing. He's certainly a good commentator. Okay, that glitch doing the Olympics when he did the swimming. Right. That's tough. But and he's not a play-by-play guy, but I think he's a commanding presence when he's on camera. He's very good. He's smooth. He can think on his feet. And I'd like to see more of Elliot Friedman.
And he's likable. And James Duthie's likable. Like it's a
key
that these guys are likable.
Yes. Anyway, mocked on social media by some
guy from
Seattle. I don't even know if I don't even know if he watched the sport because he's always talking about the Turner or TBS's, ESPN's coverage. It's and I'm like,
I know this chap. He's been here. I know this.
Anyway, I'd get what? Anybody else think Elliot Friedman would make a good host? Yes, I do. All right. So there's lots of hockey this weekend and tennis.
Yes.
Bianca Andreescu took the number 6 seed Coco Gauff to 3 sets, but could not get past the 18-year-old American in the second round of the San Diego Open, which is a WTA 500 event. So it's a second-tier event, but still a really good field. Bianca dropped the first set 6-4, roared back to win the second 6-4, looked really good, like variety of shots and power. Like she looked really good and then fell apart in the third. She was leading 2-love and up 15-40. Gauff came back, even though she was playing just terribly. And then suddenly Bianca couldn't do anything, couldn't do a thing. Gauff went on to win 5 of the next 6 games and won the final set 6-3. With the exception of a couple of quarterfinal appearances this year, maybe 2 of them, Andreescu has been a big disappointment, currently sitting at world number 56. She showed flashes of her 2019 self, Mike. Remember her then. Remember Indian Wells, Toronto, Rogers, okay? A virtual walkover in the final against a bawling Serena Williams. And then the U.S. Open, again against Serena. I mean, that was magic. That was incredible. And she has only shown flashes of herself, Mike. Flashes.
Disappointing. Disappointing.
Flash, Mike, flashes.
I know. You use the word flash in the pan for this.
I'm just saying
she's showing
flashes of her brilliance.
Time will
As
come.
For the men, Felix Auger-Aliassime is into the quarterfinals at the UniCredit Firenze Open, with an ATP 250 event in Florence, which is like a third tier event, right? FAA, the number one seed. He is dropped down in class for this one. This is sort of a horse racing thing.
Okay.
And, you know, Peter Gross could explain this to you, but dropping down in class means you're playing against, your competition isn't as good as the competition you have been going up against.
Right. It's when you play competitive slow pitch, but now you're going to play the rec league.
You're dropping down in class. This is a guy that performs in ATP 1000 events, 500. This is a 250. He's the number one seed. He gets American Brandon Nakashima in the quarterfinals. All he really has to do is just make the semis here and he'll be fine, but he really should win it. In golf, the Zozo Championship through 2 rounds in Japan, Ricky Fowler and Andrew Putnam lead at minus 10. Mackenzie Hughes, who I forgot to mention last week, hey, he won the week before at the Sanderson Farms Championship. It was exciting. It was in a playoff. It was getting dark. Remarkable. Played really well. So good on Mackenzie Hughes. He is the top Canadian at minus 2. Corey Connors, even par. Adam Svensson at plus 2. Don't forget to go to Crossman's Golf and Country Club. I'll be there Sunday. It's going to be 14 degrees. Get in your golf before the season ends. The colors are beautiful. Crosswindsgolf.com. NFL Monday Nighter. The Bears lost 12-7 to the Commanders. Fucking horrible. Just awful. The Bills play the Chiefs at Arrowhead on Sunday. Bills favorite 2.5. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes again. Ooh, love it. Love it. Wow. Steve Simmons, jerk that he is. Here's a quote from his Sunday Notes column. Quote, no one wants to say this because of the politically correct police and all, but those who coached Hakeem Aliyu must cringe every time they see him in a news report or a commercial talking about what's wrong with hockey. Like he would know. By my count, Aliyu played for 23 teams in 9 different leagues and 12 professional seasons and rarely finished any season with the team he started with. If that was color related, how is it that Wayne Simmons spent just about the same 12 seasons playing in the NHL? End quote.
Wow.
Mike.
Wow.
Aliyu's response, by the way, on Twitter, hate will never win. What is it, Mike? What is it with people? What is it specifically with Steve Simmons, who rarely has anything nice to say about anybody? And even if he does, it's like, yeah, backhanded compliments. And like, this has no context. This, he pulled this out of thin air, the Hakeem Aliyu thing. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, there's no quote from a coach or like there's no actual journalism there. It's just he just invents this in his head based on the hockeydb.com profile of what teams he played with. Like completely.
There's no context. There's no context. It's a random pot shot and then dot, dot, dot. Pot shot followed by dots.
Yeah.
And you know, he wrote a lot of nasty things about me over the years. I think he was jealous of my success. He wanted to drive a wedge between me and Taddy. Not once did he pay me or Taddy or the show or the producers of the show or anything, any kind of compliment, not even a backhanded one, right? Not even. I'll take a shot at someone, whatever, but credit where credit's due. But he was never a fan and he made it known in print. And okay, fine. He takes a non-story here and decides to pull something out of thin air about a man who struggled to make it in hockey, who wants a story told, who is trying to raise awareness moving forward as to the racism that exists in this sport. Okay, not just racism, any kind of prejudice. And then he writes shit like he should know. Can you just hear that coming from his lips? Like he should know. That's a terrible thing to say about another human being. And you know what? He should know more than you, Steve.
Hebsy, what the fuck would Steve Simmons know about life as a black man? Like, who is he to be? It's just, I find that such an irresponsible.
Very distasteful.
It's just, and it's one thing to tweet that, right? We'd be all over a tweet like that. But that was published in an actual, like, so-called mainstream media newspaper in, you know, Canada's largest market. Like, that went to print. Oh my God. I just don't know what he's thinking when he writes these things to be published in a newspaper. I don't get it.
It's damaging. It's not uplifting. I get it. He's a columnist. He doesn't have to be uplifting, but you got to be able to mix it up at least. You know, I need to hear some praise or some observation that's in, but not from, he's picking stuff out like this. And your timing is just terrible.
And he's so hated. He's so despised. Yeah. I'm almost surprised his like media credentials, like that. Right. Anyway,
leaves a bad taste in my mouth. All right. I promised Bob Costas and Tony Kubek, right? Tony turned 87 this week. And Costas was on the game the other night, the Yankees game, is doing the Yankees series. And people were like, oh my God, Bob Costas, shut up. Now, I saw a little bit of it, but I didn't see the whole game. So I couldn't tell, but from what I read was he just kept going on and on. And Ron Darling could only go, yup. So it's spring training 1983. I've got a 2-hour nightly radio show on 590 CKEY. It's the only show of its kind in Toronto. Bob McCowan is doing Sportsline on Global TV at this time. Earl McCrae had a show on 1430, but we killed him in the ratings and he was fired. So I'm doing my show from the Countryside Inn, the home hotel of the Toronto Blue Jays in Clearwater, Florida, right next to Dunedin. And every night I get a guest to come to my hotel room / studio. And I've got a little setup there with headphones and a mixer and microphones and a phone line. And we're taking questions from the callers and it was great. I'm getting everybody, all the players. Dave Steeb came on. Bobby Cox came on. It was great. So I know Tony Kubek. I've known him for a few years. He's doing the Jays games on CTV, wasn't TSN. There was no TSN then. So CTV, he's doing the games on. Yeah. And maybe CBC too. I forget who had it. I think it was CTV. So anyway, he agrees to come on the radio show and we have a great time and we talk to the callers and then we go out for dinner after the show. And we have a few drinks at the bar and some guy recognizes Tony Kubek, who played for the New York Yankees for 9 years. And, you know, like people know him as a commentator, but, you know, he was a hell of a ball player too. And this guy's a Yankee fan. And now he wants to know at the bar about every fucking player. And you can just sort of see Tony going, like he's gone through this before. I'm watching this. So the guy wants to know about Mantle. So Tony's like, oh, Mantle, great. He wants to know about Roger Maris. Oh, Rog, blah, 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 blah. He wants to know about Yogi Berra. He wants to know about Whitey Ford. And Tony Kubek is being super nice. But we've got a couple of drinks in us. And you know what I mean? Like, all right, enough is enough, this guy. So he's looking at me with this, let's fuck with this guy kind of a look. Tony Kubek, it's great. He wants to like pull one over on the guy. So the guy asks about Moose Scourin, who was the first baseman on those Yankee teams. And Tony looks at me. He gives me a look and I say, oh, poor Moose Scourin. And the guy says, what do you mean? And Tony Kubek says, oh, you didn't hear about Moose? Yeah, killed in Vietnam. Yeah, real shame. Napalm bomb. And this guy turns ashen. All the blood drains from his face. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I had no idea. So Tony like bows his head and I bow my head and the guy bows his head and the fucking bartender bows his head and there's this silence. Okay. And we're just waiting for this guy to like make a move. And the guy says, I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Kubek. And he leaves. Right. And as he goes, Tony looks up at me and we look at the bartender and I go, Moose Scourin died in Vietnam. Where the fuck did you come up with this one? And Tony says, oh, he's still alive. He says, I just had to come up with something or the guy would have asked about every single fucking player. And there were laughing people in the bar laughing. He just put this guy and this guy to this day probably thinks that Moose Scourin was killed in Vietnam. Anyway. So Tony had introduced me to Bob Costas as well at the same time at spring training in St. Petersburg, where the Cardinals train. And Costas actually had taken us out to a bar to see George Thorogood play. It was wild. Wow. In Tampa. But anyway, so I got to know Costas and I asked him if I could do an interview or whatever. And then I said, you know, listen, I do this radio show. Could I get you on as a guest on the phone? You know, we'll chat about this and that. And he says, sure. And he gives me his phone number in New York City, his apartment in New York City. At this time, he's doing baseball. I think he's doing NFL. He's quite well known, right? Bob Costas. Sure. So one night I have him on the show and he is drunk or he's high or I don't know what it was. It was a Friday night. And I get him on and I'm asking him about stuff. And his answers are really long. Like, are they really long? He's just going on and on. And I'm trying to interrupt him. And I interrupt him and I ask him another question. Anyway, we've got like, there's 5 minutes to go in the show. And I swear to you, Mike, this is the truth and listeners. I forget what the question was. He starts to answer and he's just telling a story. He's going on and on and on. And so with after about 4 minutes, my technical director, Helena Balka, the great Helena Balka.
I know that name.
Yeah. She's like rapping me. Let's go. And Costas is still talking. And with phones, you can go, Bob. And if he's talking away, he can't hear you. There's no cutout. He just doesn't hear you. He's going on and on and he's telling the story. He's probably pouring himself another drink, lying on his couch in his New York City apartment, getting laid. Who knows, right? Whatever. Yeah. I'll tell you the story about Mickey Mantle, whatever. So now Helena's rapping me and I'm like, Bob, hello, Bob. And he's still going. So right. Helena's fading him down, right? Fading his down and telling his story. And I'm going, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to Bob Costas and I guess we'll never hear the end of the story. And we play the closing theme. And in the meantime, as we're leaving the show, as we're going, off air and hitting the news at the top of the hour, you can still hear Bob Costas faintly going, and he never, like, that was it, right? And then, now the show's over and Mitch Litvak, my producer, gets on the phone to go, yeah, hello, Bob. And still, he's still fucking telling the story. So Mitch just hangs up on him. And that was the last I heard of Bob Costas. He just never.
Wow.
He just never stopped talking.
Wow. Yeah,
that's my story. That's it for episode 305 of Hebsy on Sports. Thanks so much to Toronto Mike for production and inspiration. Hit him up at Toronto Mike. Thanks to our fabulous sponsor, Crosswinds Golf and Country Club in Burlington. Go to crosswindsgolf.com, book your tee time online. And thanks to you for allowing us into your headspace. Please subscribe to the show on our YouTube channel via any way that you get your, Spotify, your podcast, or Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher Podcasts, or whatever it is. Subscribe, share, like, review the show, post the smiley emoji, do something to help promote the show. Okay? Baby needs a new pair of shoes. That's bullshit. Anything would be appreciated. Hope you enjoyed it. Back with another episode next week. Thanks for allowing us into your headspace. Until then, so long for now.